Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon, happy Memorial Day, and welcome to Sports Talk Live, brought to you, as always, by the Chevy Silverado with Lawrence Holmes, David Haw, Jay Cohen. I'm David Kaplan. Gentlemen, hope you're having a nice extended weekend. It looks like we're going to get NHL hockey and maybe the Blackhawks participating in a playoff, and NBA basketball may not see the Chicago Bulls. David, starting with you, you agree that we should try and press forward as we've speculated and get sports back if possible?
If they're safe, if they're legal, if the governors in the respective states are open to that idea and the medical professionals say that it's okay to do it, I say do it. When I'm in hockey, I love the idea. I love the 24-team tournament. I love the notion that the Blackhawks could sneak in as a 24-team. In the NBA, you know, 16, 24, I don't think the Bulls have as much to gain from it, but there's an observational period they could have. But yes, Cap, if it's safe, it's a good idea. We need our sports, and as long as they do it responsibly, I'm all for it.
Hell,
I'm encouraged. Like, that was the word that I used today on the air. I'm encouraged. But I don't think that any of us should think, oh, well, everything's done. Because, first of all, there's still some logistical things with the NHL that we have to talk about. One, where are games going to be played? And if there's going to be a hub in the United States and at least one hub in Canada, there are still some issues at the border that we have to talk about. Two, players in the NHL are a little bit more worldly than everywhere else. So you've got to recall guys that have all sorts of visa issues just to get them back here. I am encouraged, though, that they're getting close to phase two. And from what I'm hearing, there'll be an announcement that it'll happen June 1. Like, that's where people are thinking that folks will be able to go back and get on the ice. There are some teams, I was talking with Brian Hedger today, who covers the Columbus Blue Jackets. They've been telling their players, don't go get the old rollerblades out of the closet because it's bad for your skating motion. So getting guys back on the ice is a very important thing, just because there's no other way that these guys can train. They can run, they can get on the bike, they can do whatever you want. There is no substitute for a 45-second to 1 minute all-out shift on the ice. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this progresses. But definitely, it's a step in the right direction.
Jay.
Yeah, I would say encouraged is absolutely the right word, but this is like one step in a series of steps. Beyond the visa issues, I think what I'm more interested in is how are they able to procure enough testing to make this work over an extended period of time? I think there are some optics issues with that. I think it's a lot trickier than people think. But, I mean, this is the first step in a series of steps, and obviously it's very encouraging. In terms of NHL and the Blackhawks, if this works out and they do it the way that it looks like they're going to do it, like a five-game series between the Oilers and the Blackhawks sounds fantastic. I mean, it sounds great. A lot of scoring firepower, a really interesting matchup. So assuming they can pull it off, there's a lot to look forward to, but we're still a long way away.
And despite the game point, I just want real quick, like, I've never said this before, and I was talking about it earlier today. I've actually been impressed with Gary Bettman talking about how the NHL doesn't want to go to the front of the line when it comes to testing. I think that his message has actually been on point for once.
Yeah, I think the right word is encouraged. I'm excited. I just don't want them to be making this decision simply because financially we've got to get 70 games in to get our local TV money. So find a way to get on the ice or get on the court. But I am encouraged. I do not think that all 30 NBA teams need to be coming back and playing. Again, I understand the financial ramifications, but I don't need to see the Chicago Bulls anymore. I actually, like Jay, think the Blackhawks and Edmonton would be highly entertaining, David.
But I think that the Bulls and the NBA teams don't have as much to lose financially because the bulk of their season is in the books. I think when you're talking about the playoffs, it is a different scenario. And Cap, let's face it, you don't want to hear the NHL talk about, you know, economics, but it's a reality. It's why baseball is having these discussions. It's why all these leagues want to get back. There's a lot of money being lost right now. You have to be concerned about everything, including the optics. But I think, Jay, to his point, you know, the Major League Baseball is facing the same thing with 10,000 tests per week or whatever the number is. The idea is that by the time we resume sports in July, those tests will be more readily available and the optics won't be as bad because more people will have access to them in theory. Now, in reality, let's wait and see because those things have to meet, but you still have to plan.
Lawrence, how about baseball? You know, we've seen former players, Tommy Glavine, Chipper Jones, guys have come out and said, players, you may think you're right. Tommy Glavine said in 94 during the strike, I did every interview, any radio show, TV show that asked me because I wanted to educate people. And then I finally realized they don't care. They're identifying with the owners. They're taking it out on the players. And if you guys don't play for financial reasons, you are going to get crushed. You agree with that?
I do think that it'll end up happening again. What's been interesting is that over the last 5 days, the rhetoric has quieted down a little bit. And I think that if Rob Manfred's smart, he may have said to the owners, hey, don't talk about your financial situation. Because no one wants to hear that either. No one, David wrote a great piece about Tom Ricketts, and he may be right. I think there is some creative accounting that's going on. And what scares me the most about the Cubs in particular is we kept hearing, oh, well, this pile of money doesn't have any effect on this pile of money. And what we're finding out, whether it's the Cubs or whether it's the Houston Rockets and their owner, Tillman Fertitta, who is just taking a bath right now because most of his money is tied up in restaurants and in oil, two sectors of our economy that are really struggling right now, that if you put this out there as an owner, that we're finding out that as much as they talk about personal responsibility with other people's finances, that there's some financial stuff that they need to start worrying about and maybe having more money in reserve instead of overextending themselves on projects or on credit.
I think in terms of baseball cap, I mean, this is a mutually assured destruction situation. If they are unable to play because of finances, no one escapes. The owners will get hit. The players will get hit. I'm not sure either one will get hit more. I mean, but this would be – to call it a disaster for baseball, it's not strong enough. I mean, this would be – and that's why I think Lawrence correctly points out when the rhetoric gets quieter, this is when the work gets done. And I think that's kind of why you don't hear much of the brinksmanship, because I think they all sides realize what a disaster this would be for baseball. But I don't think the owners or players skate, you know, in any – I think they both get hit hard if this doesn't happen.
David, when you look at like the Liberty Media filing, who owns the Braves, because they're a public company, there were auditors that came in and looked at the books and said, okay, here's the deal. You're going to lose 63% of your revenue come from game day operations. We know that the Cubs have put on a venture in their new network, and that venture is not going to be successful yet. It may take, as they've said, 3 or 4 years. So maybe their 70% number isn't as far off as maybe we all thought.
Well, that was the purpose of looking into that. I think because when it first came out, I was skeptical like a lot of people. Like, that seemed high because the league average was 39% from the game day experience. But when you look at the Braves, who had to legally file their revenue and the sources of their revenue, 63% for a team that was 12th in attendance, Cubs were fourth. It stands the reason that the Cubs would be higher than that, especially when you've invested as much in the neighborhood as the Ricketts have and in the experience around the ballpark. So it comes as very little surprise now, upon further review, I guess, that the Cubs, 70% of the revenue comes from that game day experience. So they are projecting 15% of the revenue they earned last year, $471 million. When you do the math on that, the projected payroll and what the players will earn, you understand why there's so much give and take here and why there has to be so much compromise, because everybody's going to lose a ton of money.
Hell.
But my thing is if you remember, David, when they joked about how much it cost to renovate Wrigley Field, they were saying, no, that money is different than what we end up doing.
We got investors for that money.
Yeah. So the Hickory Street stuff that they do, like, I don't want to hear about it. Like, that supposedly has nothing to do with the baseball revenue that goes on. I think that it's the same pile of money, but they have been dying to tell you that it's not the same pile of money. So the truth of that to me is very important.
Lawrence, I totally understand what you're saying, and I think that's good to hold them to their words when they said them and what they said. The only thing I would say is that when I look at this pandemic and I look at the way that it forces people to kind of reach into funds they might not ordinarily reach into. Oh boy, I have that money for my vacation this summer, but I'm gonna have to use that to pay my mortgage. And oh, I've got this money for that great new deck, but oh, I have to pay my car payment. When you have crises like this, these that are unprecedented, I wonder if you have to make decisions that you never envisioned or wanted to make.
Yeah, you have people that, I'm not talking about the Cubs, I'm not normal everyday people, actually reaching into their 401k because they're figuring, I got to pay the bills today. I can't worry about where I'm going to be at, you know, age 70 or 65. So we're in a scary time.
Yeah, but that's the thing about it too. That's where your initial point is important, because those people don't want to hear the bickering. Now, right. I think that it's important that everyone feel like they walk out of this with a fair deal. Like that's important to me, that the players don't feel like the risk reward is worth it, that they feel like they've done this negotiation with the owners in good faith. And I hope that the owners feel the same way, because at the end of this, there's a ton of money. Like none of those guys are in the day-to-day hurting situation that most of our viewership is in, as far as decisions being made. So that's why I think that Jay's point is right too, that yeah, there's going to be some backlash on players. All of our shows are going to hear the backlash against the players, but the owners will not be unscathed, just like they weren't in 94.
Yeah, I would say too, about the owners, the thing about them you have to keep in mind is this is mostly a case of they don't have enough liquidity. I mean, they have money and like a lot of money, obviously, but it's tied up in a lot of stuff and they don't have a lot of cash on hand or enough cash on hand to deal with some of the stuff they're dealing with. It's not that they're all going to walk away rich from this. It's more along the lines that maybe, like David said, they're dipping into some funds wherever they have the liquidity to patch up other problems. I hope as we go on from this, maybe the owners across sports learn that they have to maybe take care of their finances a little bit better in order to be ready for emergencies
it's
like
this. It's also about messaging, and the owners have a strong message and they've been a lot more coherent and clear than the player side so far. If it gets to be public again and it gets messy again, the owners, I think, benefit because they have a better way of communicating.
All right. And what I think is going to end up happening is they're going to say, all right, we'll work it out, but you got to let us pay it 2 years down the road. We'll pay you X now, and we'll defer some of that, maybe with a small amount of interest. That's what I think is going to happen, and I do think we're going to get baseball back. All right, Sam Smith has been doing a number of radio shows since The Last Dance ended. He had some strong words about Michael Jeffrey Jordan. We'll talk about Sam Smith's comments about MJ. That's coming up next.
Get the latest on your Blackhawks anytime, anywhere with the My Teams app. Take the Blackhawks only home with you wherever you go. Get the best Hawks coverage and read in-depth articles. Do yourself a favor and download the My Teams app now.
Welcome back on Sports Talk Live. So The Last Dance is now in our rearview mirror, but it's the gift that keeps on giving. And this weekend, Sam Smith, the veteran Bulls writer now at Bulls.com, a long run with the Chicago Tribune, was on a radio station in San Francisco talking about one Michael Jordan. And Lawrence, he said, Michael Jordan lied. He was never coming back after the 98 season. Never. So for him to say that he would have come back, he believed he was lying. What do you think?
I think that there's a lot of foundation to believe that. Even from Jordan himself inside the documentary, you have him talking about all I can think about, guys, is how laid back he was heading into the 98 final. That was a man that was done. That was a man that was like, we got this one thing left to do, and then I'm going to go and smoke my Cohiba cigars, and I'm going to sit there, and I'm going to maybe own a team someday. I understand anyone who thinks that Sam is right on this.
Sam is a trained journalist, and he looks at things through that prism. If your mother tells you she loves you, check it out and get a second source. And that's the way he approached the book, and that's the way he approached his job for years and years and years. He has no reason to lie. Look, guys, but it's like we said all along, this was less documentary and more video tribute, a 10-hour video tribute to Michael Jordan. I loved Rudy. I loved Hoosiers, but they were both loosely based on factual events, on a true story. And that, in the same degree, The Last Dance now falls into that category.
Jake. Yeah, Rudy was offsides, David. He was offsides.
I think Michael Jordan, I mean, if you to make excuses for Michael, I think he probably looks back on it now and thinks he would have played, come back. He thinks, because now he's got the hindsight, he's rested now, and he looks back and now, sure, of course I would come back. I'm sure what Sam is saying in the time period, Sam, like a good journalist, looks at it as being around as an impartial observer at the time and says, you know, that he realizes that Jordan wasn't going to come back. I think Jordan looks back now and thinks, oh, sure, of course I would have come back and gone for another tire, because he probably doesn't remember how tired he was at the time, I would say.
Guys, facts are not affected by nostalgia. Memories are, and time. And that's what happened here. The people remember things differently than the way they actually were. And Sam's just saying, hey, this is the way they actually were.
Do you guys believe that the average fan who watches that documentary, they're sitting in, pick a spot, Omaha, Nebraska. They're sitting there, they watch this, they're like, boy, that guy was really tough on all his teammates. But then I talked to Bill Cartwright, Ron Harper, Craig Hodges, Horace Grant, and you guys talked to a billion others, and they all said, never happened that way. He picked on three guys that he could get away with it. Do you think there was a lot of creative license taken, Lawrence?
No, I think that Jordan was tough, but I also think that when he got pushback from people that were just as tough, if not tougher, he backed down. I mean, he played the role of a bully pretty well. My brother is actually going through The Last Dance right now. He's not even really a sports fan. And the text messages that I'm getting from him is like, why didn't someone punch Michael Jordan in the face? And I agree with him. And there were plenty of people, Horace, Robert Chief, that would have punched him in the face had things escalated. He was very particular in who he chose to bully. And I hope that the NBA players of today they take the good from Michael Jordan and try to use it as a lesson, Jimmy Butler, and not the bad from Michael Jordan. Because if you don't have all of those rings, you can't do much of that nonsense.
Jay?
I was going to say, I think Michael, as this document showed, is wired in a different way. And I think the guys around him sort of understood that. And you kind of saw that at the end of, I can't remember if it was 7 or 8, where he broke down at the end and he's like, you know, this is how I am. And I think he realizes on some level that he's just incapable of explaining how he is wired and how his mindset is. And I think the guys that played with him understood. I'm sure he crossed the line. I mean, he obviously crossed several lines. But those guys that like played with him, that saw how hard he worked, he earned the ability to sometimes cross the line because he worked so hard. And I think that's kind of where we are. I think the documentary was fair on him. If not, it might have been a little light on him, from what I understand. I mean, he got some run-ins, but the players, you know, it's like he said at the end of that, he wanted to win and he wanted them to go through it with him. And I think they respected him for that.
Do you guys think that people look at Michael Jordan and think, boy, it would have been amazing to play next to him, but if they had a reunion a year from right now, a lot of guys might not show up if it was a tribute to MJ.
Yeah, but it would have been the end justified the means. That's what this is all about. Look, they won 6 championships. They can complain all they want about how tough of a teammate he was and how tough he was on them. And nobody in Middle America cares about those little realities. I think that, you know, this wasn't made for his teammates. This wasn't made because you're worried about Horace Grant or Bill Cartwright, you know, complaining about it. This was made for everyone to look at Michael Jordan and for the brand to be expanded because he was the coolest, fiercest competitor ever. And that's what people remember, and that's what people want to see, and that's what people would want to be part of.
Al, do you think this was a good thing for the brand of the Chicago Bulls going forward?
Yeah, I do, because I think that it sparked something in Arturis Karnišovas. I think that all eyes get to go back on the Bulls as a franchise. So I think that there are people, because, I mean, really think about it. If you're an NBA player right now, you don't even remember most of this stuff. So you were getting a refresher course in the stories that you probably heard from old vets when you first started in the league. So I do think it's good. Whether they can capitalize on it, I'm not sure.
All right, we've got to take a timeout. When we come back, we have two great playoff games on our air tonight. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to give you our favorite non-championship moment from Chicago sports that we witnessed. That's next on STL.
Listen up, Bulls Authentic fans. The My Teams app is the perfect app for you. Get your favorite team at your fingertips. Don't miss out on the best Bulls coverage in the city and read in-depth articles. What are you waiting for? Download the My Teams app now.
Hey, coming up on Thursday, the Sports Uncovered podcast will give you the behind-the-scenes story of Michael Jordan's I'm Back facts that changed the NBA and restarted the Bulls en route to three more championships. You can subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts. All right, we have a couple of great games on our air tonight. We've got Brent Seabrook with a phenomenal moment against the Detroit Red Wings, and it got Coop and Danny Wysocki and I to thinking, what is the best non-championship moment that we've seen? And for me, it was the Nashville Game 5 Blackhawks 2010 when they tied it with 15 seconds left, shorthanded, Hossa in the box, five-minute major, and as soon as the major ends in overtime, he skates out, camps at the side of the net, sticks it home, Hawks win, they clinch down in Nashville, move on and win their first cup. So for me, that's the coolest event I've ever been to. You guys?
Well, I would say this, it wasn't a championship. The Bears did not win it, but Devin Hester's return in the Super Bowl for a touchdown was the coolest moment I've ever experienced as a sports writer. But if you want to go recent and without a championship involved, Khalil Mack's dominant performance in his debut for the Bears against the Packers at Lambeau, September 2nd, 2018. Hard to top that as far as individual performances.
Jay, Lauren,
I'll take the 2013 series after the Red Wings Blackhawks. When Taze to Kane to beat the Kings in double overtime in Game 5. Perfect pass, perfect shot, caps a hat trick, unbelievable moment.
Lord. Give me the blackout game. I still get chills thinking about that game as a fan base. I just thought it was so cool that within 24 hours of Brooks Boyer being like, hey, we're all wearing black tomorrow, that we showed up, got treated to an incredible game, and it was one of my favorite experiences as a fan ever.
And yeah, you had to enjoy it. Diehard Sox fan, he said, make me the most enjoyable game he's ever attended. All right, we're out of time. Guys, enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day. We'll see you tomorrow on Sports Talk Live. Have a great evening. Stay safe.